Next is in the matter of Stephen Severet. Is Mr. Severet here? To have appearances of counsel. Mr. Severet, can you just tell us when you last submitted anything in connection with this matter? You're welcome to sit.
I believe it was late July. And then in response to my brief, I received a letter from the court saying that we can't have until some date in August. I don't remember exactly what the date was for her to respond to the to my page.
Yes, Ken.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and members of the court. This matter is before the court on a recommendation from the Discipline Review Board that respondent Stephen N. Severet be disbarred for his knowing misappropriation of escrow funds in violation of the N. Ray Wilson and N. Ray Hollandonner cases. In the alternative, the review board found that if the Klein funds named Rento were not escrowed funds, they still were Mr. Rento's funds, such that Mr. Severet committed knowing misappropriation of Klein funds in violation of N. Ray Wilson. The OAE submits the hearing record and the special ethics adjudicator's review of the record showed the clear and convincing evidence upon which the charge of knowing misappropriation was found. Despite his claims to the contrary, Mr. Severet was provided and exercised his opportunity to cross-examine the OAE's auditor and to challenge the OAE's proofs on the five charges of knowing misappropriation the OAE had brought against him. Mr. Severet was also provided and exercised the opportunity to put forth his defense case, and contrary to his claims, the special ethics adjudicator considered all the evidence introduced at trial, including Mr. Severet's testimony. Specifically, the special ethics adjudicator found only one instance of knowing misappropriation, found that the OAE or that the evidence only supported three counts of negligent misappropriation, and found no unethical conduct on a fifth count. That he was afforded all due process from the ethics system, as well as from the trier fact below, was made clear in the SEA, the C's detailed hearing report. The OAE, therefore, respectfully requests or relies upon both the hearing report and the decision of the review board in submitting that Mr. Severud's one count of knowing misappropriation of the rental funds warrants his disbarment. Unless there are any questions from the court, the OAE relies upon its brief.
According to the DRB's decision, Mr. Rento spent some of the $10,000 deposit on personal matters. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I believe the testimony was that Mr. Severet mistakenly thought he had permission to use $2,500 of that $10,000 deposit as the son, David Rento, had used Mr. Severet for a business of his. Even though, and so, and that's why the board concluded in the alternative that there was still no misappropriation. Because even if we were to credit that $2,500 approval, the funds went below $7,500 around December of 2016, I want to say, as Mr. Severet was moving his law office or moving his residence, and he used monies of the remaining $7,500 rental funds for moving expenses, rent, and other matters.
So that's such, that's the $4,000 referred to at page 88. The move is a move of his office that drops the balance to about $4,600.
Yes, Chief Justice.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Severo.
Distributed document. It was referenced in the decision below.
What is the document, sir?
It is a deed from the Sheriff of Morris County into Bank of New York.
Have you shared that with the OAE?
She has as part of the investigation record.
You've not responded of late, and now you're offering to hand up documents to the court. Why don't you begin by telling us what it's about? You're welcome. You have to come to the center, bring a chair. You're welcome to sit. Let's start with the presentation of your argument, and then we're happy to consider whether to take documents from you during the course of this argument for the first time.
Right, first and foremost, the clerk of the court called me at I want to say the late June or early July, and said that she had received all of my mail back with stamps on it that said moved, left no forwarding address. That was when she then sent me the mail by email, which told me the date that my brief was due. Unfortunately, that date had already passed by, I believe, a day or two. I'd almost finished my brief anyway. I finished it within a few days and sent it as soon as it was finished. In response, the court then entered in a modified order for briefing and gave Ms. Kim 2 weeks roughly until sometime in August, and that's when she filed her brief. So there clearly was a problem with respect to the mails that I was not receiving anything, because if I had received something from the Supreme Court, obviously I would have responded.
You did get the court's notice, and you did not, or did you, submit a brief after that?
I did not get the original notices.
The follow-up notice that you just mentioned you received?
I did receive a follow-up notice, but she emailed it to me the day that we were on the phone.
And have you submitted anything since then?
No, I haven't received any notices since then.
Did you ask for permission to submit anything other than just now?
This is a document. I did not. This is a document from the trial.
You did submit a brief, though, after receiving the
notice. Yes. Yeah, I did submit a brief in late July 20th, give or take.
Ms. Kim, do you have a position on the document?
I believe Mr. Severo already mentioned the itself per his argument that the actual owner of the property to be purchased is not the named seller in the application sheet. I believe the special office adjudicator addressed that, but if he's stating it's in the trial record, it would be in the record such that the court does not need a copy of it during his argument.
Well, I'd like to give you a copy of it just so that it's here so that you can see what my argument is. It's much easier to see it when it's right in front of you, if you don't mind.
Why don't you explain the relevance of what we're talking about?
I will.
This was presented by you during the proceeding or by the OAE?
It was presented right after the closing statements were issued, before she issued her decision, which was 2 years after the date on which our closing statements were due. We finished trial in September. I believe our closing statements were due roughly November. Ms. Kim, is that accurate, of 2021? And we received the decision roughly 2 years later in November of 2023.
Why don't you proceed with your argument?
I do not dispute that I made, between my bookkeeper, who is also my mother-in-law, and I, we made several errors in record keeping in my ATA. I do not dispute that in the least, but I do dispute that it's a knowing taking of the money, because the records I was following obviously were in error. There were also two bills that I submitted to clients that were in error. And as soon as I was told that they were in error by the OAE who found them, I immediately sent them their funds. On the other clients, where if I found the errors before they became an issue, for example, one of them was a closing, and I discovered the error and the file closed on time, as did the other matters. Same with the Rento matter. The issue with respect to the Rento matter is that the decision of the SEM is that the contract was a valid binding contract on June 26th, I believe is the date, of 2016, as soon as my client signed the document. There are several problems with that decision from the SEM. First, those documents were not signed by anyone on behalf of the seller, whoever the seller might be, until December 14th, which is after I was no longer involved in the matter. So there were no signed contracts or the other document is a counteroffer that was not signed during my representation of Mr. Rento.
But whether there was a signed contract or not, why did Mr. Rento give you $10,000?
To hold for the purchase, except for $2,500, which he said I could use to pay an old bill.
And so you don't dispute that money should have been held inviolate?
I do not dispute that, no.
And yet monies were used to pay for personal expenses instead. Tell us because, and why.
Because as I said, between my mother-in-law and I, there were mistakes made, and I am responsible for whatever she does. It is my trust account. I'm the one responsible for it. I don't deny that. But there were errors made, not a knowing misappropriation of funds. Is my distinction only. With respect to the decision on whether there was a contract or not, that becomes important because the master determined that somehow I needed to contact Wells Fargo, who is not involved in the ownership of this property at any point ever, and somehow get their approval to spend the money to take the $2,500. My client signed the papers on June 26th. On or about July 7th, I believe, of that same year, I sent a proposed modification to the agreement to Wells Fargo's realtors, who was the only person I had named that I could speak to. And there, I didn't receive anything back from them. So again, through my representation on or about July 1st through December 14th, I never received any response from Wells Fargo or the Bank of New York, who was actually the owner, which is what the importance of this document is. That her determination that there was a valid binding contract on June 26th, when my client signed it, is contrary to the statute of frauds. And this deed is signed by Sheriff Rochford on August 29th, 2016. So there could never have been a valid binding contract between my client and Wells Fargo, Bank of New York, or anyone else, because they were foreclosing on it at the time. And until that sheriff sale took place and the sheriff signed this deed, they didn't own it. So they could never have signed a contract. So my point is that section of her decision is inaccurate because she made certain findings of fact and law that are simply not supported by the facts shown by this deed. So again, I'm not disputing that I made mistakes and misused that money, but it was put back.
What was the nature of the mistake? You refer to it as a mistake or an error, but what was the nature of it that led to you using that money?
That my mother-in-law told me that it was my funds, that there were monies that were put into the account, for example, for a closing. I would get $100,000 from the client, that's their deposit. And at the closing, $98,500 would be paid off to the seller, and that $1,500 would be my legal fee, rather than the closing agent cutting a check to me, that I would just provide her with less funds. And so there were errors made with respect to that type of accounting.
So there was other money in the account besides the $10,000. There were other clients' money.
At that point, no, I believe that was the only money in my account.
So if that was the only money in the account, then how did the error get made with respect to the $10,000?
Because my mother-in-law took care of it and I didn't notice. So I was negligent in not noticing and seeing and being on top of how much was in there. Absolutely.
Was there a separate business account in addition to the trust account?
It was separate business and trust, yes.
Have you always taken the position that you were obligated to hold the $7,500 or the $10,000? Or was it dependent on the nature of the contract?
I was obligated to hold that money.
And is that the position you consistently took before the special adjudicator and the DRB?
I believe it was. I have never disputed I was entitled to take the $2,500 to pay for my legal bill based on the client telling me that. The $7,500 I had no right to use, and it was a mistake.
Did you dispute at some point that he was your client at all?
Now we get into the drafting of the complaint. The complaint discusses...
Is that yes or...
I can't answer that directly. I'm getting to the answer to that question. The answer to that question is that the complaint discusses a David. I'm sorry. What's his last name? I apologize. Rento. David Rento. David Rento Jr. was, using junior versus senior, was the person who came to me, told me they were buying a home, and he was the one through all my communications. It was my understanding that his father, David Sr., or David L. Rento, as Ms. Kim mentions, was providing him with a $10,000 deposit. If you see the complaint, it just says David Rento. And through all of the pretrial matters, it was always just there was one David Rento, the person that I had dealt with, the son. All of a sudden at trial, it became two David Rentos, David L. Rento, the father, and David Rento, the son, who was my understanding was still the person buying the home. And he is the person that said I could use the $2,500 to pay my legal fee. So that has been
which of the two? Who said you could use the money?
The son.
Son.
So you were disputing that the father was your client. You agreed the son was your client.
I agree with the SEM's analysis. At the time, I disagreed with her, but based on her analysis, I agree with her now.
As to the document at the end of the argument, make sure that Ms. Kim has a copy and the clerk of the court will take it from you for all of us.
Now?
At the end of the
argument. At the end, sorry. My position in this argument is that the amount of lies told by Mr. Mendyke in his testifying, in his reports, and in his affidavits that were filed with you in connection with my original temporary suspension are such that Mr. Rento is not a credible witness. He perjured himself on the witness stand. And I don't know if it was because Ms. Kim didn't properly prepare or because she participated in that perjury. And she has now lied in her brief now when she says that the issue with respect to the Kazis was that Rento said that Kuzbu Kazi was Mr. Kazi. That's a mistake. He blamed me for that mistake, but it's actually him because he could not copy a transcript accurately. I referred to Mr. Kazi when I was in one of the depositions that they took of me, and that he added Kuzbu to the front of that, or into the middle between Mr. and Kazi. I never used the first name. So Kuzbu Kazi, first off, is the daughter, and Mendyke confirmed that in a conversation on July 6th of 2020, and the affidavit even says, Mahazbin Kazi stated that Jamalan Kazi is her husband and Kuzbu Kazi is her daughter. At the end of the trial, in Ms. Kim's closing statement, what she stated was that Kuzbu Kazi is Mr. Kazi, that I agreed with her that he was Mr. Kazi, and that therefore she should be entitled to judgment on that point. I've never agreed with her. And even Mr. Mendyke didn't agree with her, but the testimony was all from Mr. Mendyke was all about Kuzbu Kazi. The only reference to anyone else was I asked him if he had ever spoken to Kuzbu Kazi, and he testified, no, I haven't. So that made all of his testimony baseless, because he had always specifically discussed what Kuzbu Kazi did. Then the master morphed that into a decision where it states that Mrs. Mahazabin Kazi was the source of all the information, even though Mr. Mendyke never testified about anything that Mrs. Mahazabin Kazi said to him or did or any other facts. So she amended the complaint to note that it was Mrs. Kazi, not Miss Kazi. And she amended his testimony as if it was somehow not Kuzbu Kazi, but Mahazabin Kazi. And that error has existed in the complaint as far back as August 10th of 2020, when prior counsel before Ms. Kim took over, with respect to the Kazi matter, as alleged in Section C of Count 1, respondent points to the fact that Kazi, the term Kazi, refers to Kuzbu Kazi, and yet the references to Kazi throughout the complaint are plainly about the wife and not the husband. This was simply a drafting error, as evidenced by the fact that the investigation report upon which the complaint was based used Kazi as a proxy for Mahazabin Kazi. The point being that the OAE made the mistake as to who's who, And they blamed me in this brief. And she has blamed me for creating that also in other papers. So the OAE subsequently confirmed that Mr. Kazi's first name is Jamaluddin, not Kuzbu, and Kuzbu is the daughter. So the point is, the master's complaint is inaccurate because there was no testimony regarding what Mahazabeen Kazi said or did. And the complaint doesn't reference what Mahazabeen Kazi said or did. It's all based on what Kuzbu Kazi said and did. So factually and legally, what she has had to say is inaccurate. And that's another reason why, to me, the decision should be stricken. Now, finally, Ms. Kim references numerous times that it's not worth the time and effort, basically, and the resources to amend the complaint and to actually put forth the facts that are set forth are the facts that they're pursuing me on. And I just find that hard to believe when they're trying to take away my livelihood, that they have no obligation to actually plead the facts on which they're pursuing. And the law and any other allegation that they're making about me, that is the basis for their claim that I should be disbarred.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, sir.
I'm going to ask you to take your seat back, and I'd like Ms. Kim to come to the center. Ms. Kim, we heard the references to mistake and perjury. I'm not asking you to defend against an allegation of perjury that was just leveled in court. You've been in front of this court many a time, and we're familiar with your professionalism. I would like you to respond to two questions with respect to the Rento matter. Number one, was there a different position that Mr. Severid had advanced with respect to whether the 10,000 or the 7,500 needed to be held inviolate during the course of the proceedings? And second, can you tell us, in light of his explanation that this was a bookkeeping error, why this was not negligent misappropriation and instead is intentional?
Regarding Mr. Severu's position as to the rental funds, first 10,000 and 7,500, I do believe Mr. Severu's position before the court has changed because during at least the trial and before the board, there was confusion as to the actual client of Mr. Severud. So Mrs. Rento sent a wire deposit of $10,000 into Mr. Severud's attorney trust account. And it was on behalf of David L. Rento. And it must have missed the OAE's attention and Mr. Severud's attention when the complaint was filed. But at trial, it became clear that there were two David Rentos, and the special adjudicator made it very clear how she determined that the father, El Rento, owned those funds and actually was the client. Because despite Mr. Severud's stating there was no finalized contract, he had documents that he had affected on behalf of David L. Rento, the father. So his position, which the OAE appreciates before this court, is that he had no right to those funds. And I believe at one point, even though the son supposedly had authorized him to use $2,500 of the 10,000, he said that was a mistaken belief and that the son had not actually authorized the use. But so it's 10,000.
But he has said today that same thing, that he had no right to use the funds and it was a mistake. Did he take a different position as to whether he had the right to use those funds previously in this matter?
Not to my knowledge. And again, I did not do the investigation. I came on as trial counsel, but Mr. Severud has put forth a new defense regarding his mother-in-law acting as a bookkeeper. He had only brought up that defense when we charged misappropriation of $10,000 of the Williamses. $1,000 was missing. It did not get transferred to the new trust account. Mr. Severus' defense, which the adjudicator accepted, was that his mother-in-law told him to move only $9,000 and not the $10,000. And based on her direction, he mistakenly used the remaining $1,000. He never put forth his mother-in-law acting as bookkeeper regarding the rental funds to the OAE during his investigation.
She didn't testify at the hearing, did she?
She did not. The OAE tried to interview her, and I think either she was ill or she was just was not available.
You'll have a chance to speak after Ms. Kim is complete.
So his statement today regarding the mistake he made regarding the rental funds was because of what his mother-in-law had told him was not what he had espoused at trial. I don't think he ever mentioned his mother-in-law.
Did he ever make a representation to that effect before his mother-in-law died?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Did Mr. Severud ever represent to the OAE that his mother-in-law had misdirected him on those funds before his mother-in-law passed away?
No. Mr. Severud never mentioned his mother-in-law's actions as bookkeeper in reference to the rento funds. Today was the first time the OAE has heard that statement. The mother-in-law, Mr. Severud had noted his mother-in-law only with reference to the Williams' funds, which the adjudicator and the board have found to be a negligent misappropriation. So, Chief Justice, in answer to your question regarding why the OAE did not charge negligent misappropriation on the rental funds because of what the mother-in-law supposedly did, the OAE was never told that. So we charged a knowing.
What is the OAE's position today with respect to those funds as to knowing versus negligent misappropriation?
I believe the proofs and his statements to the board where he stated he knew those monies were on behalf of a purchase of real estate. He knew when he took the funds out of the trust account that they would drop below the balance required for the purchase, and that he knew the other side did not approve his taking. So based on that, the OAE submits it's a known misappropriation warranting disbarment.
And again, during the course of the proceedings, you're telling us there was nothing put forward as to this having been a mistake, a bookkeeping mistake.
Not on the rental funds.
Funds. Questions, Emily? Next. Anything you'd like to add, Ms. Kim?
No, thank you. Your questions covered what I had wanted to bring to the court's attention.
Thank you, Mr. Severud. We'll hear from you.
Thank you.
With respect to that matter of my mother-in-law, these conversations with the OAE, and maybe that's part of the problem of changing attorneys in midstream, but in roughly January of 2017, meaning Mr. Mendike and Mr. Zweig, who was prior counsel, called me on a Friday afternoon while I was driving home, and I remember exactly where I pulled off of the road so I could talk to them. And they had a conversation with me about whether my mother-in-law was an employee or a volunteer. And I was not paying her, so we discussed this for half an hour, that she was somehow my employee, and they were alleging that I had failed to file tax forms for her and failed to pay taxes on anything I was paying her. But I wasn't paying her. As I said, she was a volunteer. So she was my bookkeeper throughout, and I'm hard-pressed to understand how the OAE is taking a position that she's my bookkeeper, and somehow they're parsing out that, well, she looked at this one, but not the other five.
So there was a hearing in this matter.
I'm sorry?
There was a hearing in this matter.
Yes, there was.
You were accused of knowing misappropriation, which is a disbarrable offense.
Yes, it is.
In response to that, during the course of the hearing, did you present anything, argument, evidence, documents, testimony, that said this was a mistake by my mother-in-law as to the rental funds?
I can't specifically say whether it was her mistake or my mistake, but I did reference that she was my bookkeeper and that someone between the two of us made the mistakes.
And tell us how that came across during the hearing. How was that presented? In what form?
It was my testimony was basically a speech, if you will, that she would ask Mr. Mendike questions, and then I had my opportunity to present my own testimony because obviously, there's no one cross-examining me. I'm appearing pro se. So it was my giving a presentation of each of the facts that Mr. Mendike had testified to and my response to them, the ones that I disagreed with or the ones that I felt he had been inaccurate on. So I did reference that my mother-in-law was my bookkeeper at trial.
Can you tell us where we might be able to find that?
I would have to go back through the transcripts, but it would probably be on, Ms. Kim, I believe, finished at least the second day. So it would be possibly in the third day or the fourth day.
So is it your position that with regard to the Williams matter, you did rely on your mother-in-law? So that was a mistake made by your mother-in-law in the Williams matter. But with regard to the rental matter, you don't know who made the mistake.
No, I don't. And that's exactly right, because I asked her to write me a check for the amount that was in the account for Williams, because I was moving my office to Parsippany, and the bank I used in Long Valley didn't exist in Parsippany. It's PPAC Gladstone Bank, which is a local bank. So I would have had to come constantly back to Long Valley to go to that bank. So I moved it to TD Bank, which is all around. And so I was taking that money, that $1,000, which was almost everything that was in there, and depositing it into the account. She only gave me a check for $900, which I mistakenly believed was the full amount. And I opened the account at TD Bank with that $900.
I want to save a little time of moving back and forth and ask Ms. Kim a question now. Stay where you are. Ms. Kim, we've heard your explanation earlier. Is your recollection of events the same or different from what we just heard from Mr. Severo?
Regarding the Williams matter, it's accurate, but it's not 1,000 out of 10 minutes.
Oh. And as to the rental?
I do not recall there being testimony with the mother-in-law's position as bookkeeper being raised as defense on the rental.
Please go ahead.
Regarding the
Please go ahead, Mr. Severo.
So I have represented throughout that she was my bookkeeper, and I'm not
there's
sure.
There's a difference, is there not, between saying she was my bookkeeper and saying she was my bookkeeper and I handled the rental matter based on misadvice from her. See what I'm talking about?
I understand.
You may have said that she was your bookkeeper, and that may be perfectly appropriate testimony. But I think what the distinction that counsel for the OAE is making is, as far as she recalls, there was no prior representation that there was a role that your mother-in-law played in what occurred with respect to the rento money. See what I'm saying?
I understand. And I can't say whether it was her or me that made that mistake.
I understand, that's what you said, but what was
that? Was what I said then as well.
Okay, so you did raise the possibility that your mother-in-law gave you the wrong advice.
Yes.
We should be able to find that by looking at the transcript with your help after.
Yes.
Anything else you'd like to add?
One thing I would add, you asked about the representations. Ms. Kim made a representation in her brief in this matter that says that she knew that Kuzbu was not the husband, and she attempted to rehabilitate Mr. Mettendyke at trial. And that is patently not accurate, because in her closing statement, again, she stated Kuzbu is Mr. Kazi and that I agreed with her. So she's changing her position as time has gone on as well.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement.